a sudden voice said. Give me your report of what you think of as you go, you three all by yourselves. I started, as do scared and timid beasts. I raised my hand to see who this was. Never in a furnace flared metal or glass so glowing red as he. The angel said, If up high you would climb, here you must turn to find the peaceful sky. His aspect stole my eyesight for a time, so that I trailed my teachers only by my hearing. And just as the breeze of May, dawn's herald, when it stirs, gives out perfume so full of grass and flowers in that way, I felt a wind, fanned by each fluttering plume of his wing, strike my brow, and I could sense the odor of ambrosia. How blessed they are who are lit up by such intense grace that the appetite within their breast stirs not the fumes of a too great desire, but just the hunger justice might require. Canto 25. The sun was in the ram, and had declined 2 hours from noon, which left the bull on high in the meridian. By that same kind of movement, night had quit the tallest sky above Jerusalem. So you would find the scorpion up there if you could look, and we were short of time for our ascent. Pressed in advance for all the time it took, we were as one that no impediment can stop, because necessity, his goad, pricks him continually, and our small crew met one by one the next stage on our road by entering a gap so tight that you were forced to climb alone on its stone stairs. And as the little stork might lift one wing to quit the nest and thereby prove it dares to fly but then pretends that no such thing had crossed its mind and drops the wing again, just so was I with my desire to ask a question. And I almost spoke, but then I didn't. My guide, equal to the task, for all our speed of foot, did not refrain. Your bow of speech, he said, is tightly drawn, right to the arrowhead, and creaks with strain. Please let it loose. With confidence reborn, this time I got the words out. How do they get thin, when there's no need of nourishment? And he, If only you recall the way Meleager's life was lived and wholly spent in one brand's burning, this point won't be hard for you. And if you also think of how your image in the glass meets your regard, with every move you make, not soon but now, exactly similar yet isn't real, you'll find it easier to realize that souls can well reflect what bodies feel and make it seem substantial to your eyes. But just to set your puzzlement at rest, I call on Statius and bid him heal your wounds. If in your presence I attend, said Statius, to spirits seen as real, although the actual body is long gone, in the eternal life it is because I can't refuse you. That said, he went on. My son, if in your mind you open doors to take my words in, I can demonstrate how this can be. The thirsty veins do not drink perfect blood, which, sharing the pure state of food kept from the table, takes in what the heart confers, the power to generate the future body's parts. Like blood that takes the standard course through veins to fashion these, the perfect heart's blood subsequently makes its way down to where words are bound to please, less than a decent silence, and from there it joins another's blood in the right place, the natural vessel. In this way the pair of matched streams mingle as they share the space, one passive and the other, since it flows from sheer perfection, active. The twinned stream begins to function as its thickness grows, coagulating, quickening its seam of virtue into potent readiness. A soul, much as a plant's, but not the same, because the plant's soul sets out never less than all set to arrive, whereas the frame of this soul is sea fungus at the most. It moves, it feels, it goes on to produce organs for faculties. It is the host of every little thing and each thing's use that grows out of its seed. And now, my son, the force unfolds and spreads out of the heart of the begetter until all is one, and nature has made shift for every part and member. But you can't see how it's done as yet. quite how from the dumb animal a creature comes that speaks, and neither could a wiser one than you. He saw it all, except one special part that would come good and be the mind. No, Aristotle thought the intellect was separate from the soul and common to all men, and so he taught. But open up your breast now to the whole truth of this tricky matter. It's like so. No sooner does the structure of the brain get organized within the embryo than in comes the first mover, mice in mane, happy at nature's work of art, and gives a potent inspiration to it, which incorporates all that already lives in there. And so a single soul made rich by these two elements begins to thrive and feel and think. And lest these words of mine astonish you of how men come alive, consider how the sun's heat turns to wine when it combines with the substantial juice that pours from the pulped grapes plucked from the vine. Or think how from the flesh the soul pulls loose when lachesis runs out of flax. It takes along with it all the potentials for the faculties, that is, whatever makes the human or divine. The first no more are heard. The second, memory and thought and will, the things that nothing can confer save the divine, freed from their last resort in flesh, are more acute than they once were. And so the soul falls marvelously towards one of two shores, and all this will occur without a pause. The Tiber's, where it boards the boat sent for the saved, or else the dark bank of the Acheron. And then it first becomes aware of how it will embark and where it's bound. As soon as it's immersed in space, its formative essential force sends out its rays in just those shapes they took for living members, taking the same course that sunbeams take in rain-soaked air. We look and see the colors. Thus the air around will set itself into the self-same form the soul had when alive. There will be found a stamp of the soul's power. Though not as warm, the shape will, as the flame follows the fire, follow the spirit. Since it has by this its image from then on, so we require to fit it the name Shade, for emphasis on insubstantial visibility. And from this air, organs for every sense are formed, even for sight. As we can see, we speak, and smile, and weep, and heave intense sighs of the depth that might have met your ears here on this hill. As our desires impinge on us, the shade takes form and so appears, at which you marvel. We were at the hinge of the last torment, taking a right turn, and faced another care. Out from the bank flames shoot. To bend them as they burn, the path sends up a blast from its far flank so that the fire is kept back. Thus we had, one at a time, to take the open side. For me this had two ways of being bad. Since on the one hand there was this hot tide of fire to face, and on the other I feared falling. Along here we must draw tight on our eyes' reins, lest our steps go awry. But then I heard in that great burning light, a song, Summae Deus Clementiae, the hymn that tells us chastity is right, which made me keen to turn. Within the flames were spirits walking, so I kept looking at them, my stunned glance hard to win away from them and back to where I stepped, my gaze divided. Their hymn fully sung, they cried what Mary said to Gabriel, thus, Verum non cognosco. In our tongue, no man was with me, for the world knows well that she was chaste. And then they all began to sing the hymn again, and at the end this time they cried, Diana hid from man deep in the woods, and would not keep for friend the nymph Callisto, who with Jove had lain, but banished her because she dared to drink the poison Venus pours, the wine of pain. And then they sang again. And will, I think, first sing, then cry, then sing for all the time they burn. Of all the husbands and the wives who keep their marriage free of that sad crime by being chaste as wedlock wants our lives to be. And with such precepts and such prayer, the last wound of them all we may repair. Canto 26. While one before the other thus we went along the edge, my master often said, "Watch out, for what I warn is truly meant." The sun now struck me, not from overhead, but more on my right shoulder, for its beams changed all the west from azure into white. But as pale fire, when cloaked with shadow, seems more glowing, so my shadow made the light more visible. For many shades assigned to heed, and their first cause to speak of me, deducing that my flesh might still be mine. "His body," said one, "does not seem to be unreal." And some approached me just as near as they could come without their breaking through to where they would not burn, their only fear. One spoke, "Pray answer, going as you do behind the others, not for tardiness, perhaps, but more for reverence, say what's true. Not only I who burn with thirst, no less from fire long for an answer, but all these long for it as an Ethiopian dreams of cold water. Therefore tell me, please, how comes it you're a wall that stops the sun? And if so far you have escaped death's net?" So spoke one, and I would have said my name right then, had my attention not been set on something else strange. Through the hall of flame, and facing opposite to those we'd met, came people whose appearance held my gaze suspended. Then the shades on either side make haste to kiss each other, a mere graze, because they neither break nor slow their stride. Just as the ants in their dark troop will touch muzzle to muzzle, as they ask the way, perhaps, or how the day goes, it was such with these, who, ending their brief interplay before they took their next step to move on, each tries his hardest to outshout the rest. The ones who just arrived, to get them gone, cry, "Sodom and Gomorrah!" and attest to lusts in spite of nature, while the first group we encountered cries out, "Persephone enters the cow to slake her raging thirst with what the bull brings," and so testify to natural lusts ungoverned. Then, like cranes that fly, some to the mountains in the north and some south to the sand, for none remains of these when the frost comes, and those go forth when too much sun shines. So the two crowds go their separate ways, and all return with tears to their first chanting, and the cry they know befits their weakness. By their looks all ears, those came close who'd entreated me before. Twice, having seen their need, I said, "Souls who are bound to have at the right time your store of peace, my limbs are not left, either new or old back there. They're here, both blood and joint. It is to be no longer blind I climb. A lady waits above fit to appoint the grace for me by which I conquer time, bringing my mortal body through your world. But so your greatest wish may soon be met, where heaven's love most widely is unfurled, in highest light, say now, so I may yet put pen to parchment, who you are, and what that crowd is that goes back behind you there." The mountain man's no more stunned by his lot, when rough and rustic, with a speechless stare, he comes into the city than each shade was now. But when they were relieved of that amazement, which will always quickly fade in lofty hearts, the one who, puzzled at my shadow, first had spoken, spoke again. "How you are blessed, you that, to better die, take on experience from us. Those men who go the other way from us and cry so differently were guilty of that lust for which, in triumph, Caesar heard the call, 'Regina,' from the crowd, and so they must go crying, 'Sodom,' as you heard, for all with self-reproach and shame thus reinforce their burning. Our sin, on the other hand, was double-sexed, but ran outside the course of human law, our hunger in command, as with the beasts. So parting we cry now her name, who made, we add to our disgrace, herself a beast inside the timber cow, a beast within a beast, wherein this place for deeds you now know, and our guilt as well. If you would know our names, time would be short to tell you if I could, but I can tell you this much. I can satisfy your thought about who I might be and who I was. I'm Guido Guinizelli, and I make already my purgation here because I sorrowed properly for my soul's sake before the end. as when Lycurgus grieved for his child, and brought to the point of death the woman whose neglect left him bereaved, but her two sons staved off her dying breath by rushing to embrace her. So with some restraint did I become to hear him speak his name, Father of me and all that come along with me, and some make me look weak. All those who speak the sweet and graceful rhymes of love, and deaf and dumb I went along a long way, thoughtful, gazing many times at him, the founder of our school of song, but kept from coming near him by the fire. My sight of him once fed, I offered him my services for all he might require, assuring him that this was no mere whim. And he to me, You leave a trace so clear in me, that Lethe can't destroy or dim what you have told me. If you hold me dear, however, if your words are true, you should also inform me why your look and speech show that. Make your affection understood. And I to him, Sir, your sweet lines that reach from your time into ours, and which will last as long as people talk, have made their ink eternal treasure. Brother, only cast your glance at him ahead, and you might think again, he said while pointing. He surpassed me as a master of the mother tongue. He was the better craftsman in all forms of love verse and romantic tales. Among their writers he stood out. As for the swarms of idiots who hail the boring stuff of Giraud from Limoges, they think to heed a widespread reputation is enough to judge the truth, and if we might not need to hear from art or reason. The same thing once happened with Guittone. One cracked voice croaked to the next that only he could sing. But finally, most made the proper choice, the sweet new style. Now if you have been graced with so much favor that you have the right to see the cloister where Christ is emplaced as abbot of the brotherhood, you might say, just for me, a paternoster, trimmed of its last words, for here the power to sin is gone from us, and so the need is dimmed for that whole prayer. But others might move in, perhaps, and take his place. He disappeared into the fire as when a fish goes down to the bottom through the water. Then I neared the one who, for the sake of his renown, had earlier been pointed out. His name, I told him, had a place of welcome set in my inquiring soul, and so it came to be that he spoke thus. We are well met. Your courtly question pleases me so much, I neither may nor could hold back the news of who I am from one with such a touch for gentle manners. How can I refuse? Matching his mind to his expressive style, in Provençal his eloquence was cast. I am Arnaud, who weeps and sings the while he walks. I see my follies of the past with grief, and yet I still see with a smile the day I hope I will attain at last. And now I beg of you, by that great good which guides you to the summit of the stairs, that you will think of and have understood in time my sins and penitential cares. The furnace that refines them shone so bright. When he stepped back, he vanished in the light.
Canto 27. As when it shoots its first rays where the one who made it shed his blood, and when, in Spain, the scales are overhead with night half done, and noon burns on the Ganges' gathered rain, so here, nigh unto sinking, stood the sun. The day, therefore, was all set to depart, when God's glad angel showed himself outside the flames, and, Blessed are the pure in heart, he sang, his voice far clearer than my guide or I could boast. There is no way ahead, unless you brave the fire and feel its sting. So enter, holy souls, and then be led with open ears by what the voices sing, he said when we were near, while I became to hear him like one laid low in his grave. I stretched up my clasped hands, gazed at the flame, imagining how once in a deep cave I had seen bodies burning. Then to me my escorts turned, and Virgil said, My son, there may be torment here, death there can't be. Recall, recall, even on Geryon I kept you safe. So what shall I do here, nearer to God? You may well rest assured, if you stayed in these flames year after year, 1,000 years, their fire could not afford one singed hair to your head, so never fear. And if, perhaps, you think that I deceive, go close. Try with your hands, and with the edge of what you wear, and then you will believe. You'll put off every qualm, and you will pledge your trust. Yet I continued to stand still, still hesitant, though I had no defense against my conscience. When he saw my will to stay was so unbending and intense, a little troubled, he said, "Now, son, look. Dividing you from Beatrice is this wall." And as we read in the time-honored book of Pyramus and Thisbe, before all the mulberry turned red, he raised his eyes, while dying, towards her. Just so my streak of stubbornness dissolved, and to my wise leader I turned, for I had heard him speak the name forever vivid in my mind, at which he frowned, and said, "Are we to stay always on this side?" But his smile was kind, as if aimed at a child that we can sway with just an apple. Then with me behind he put himself into the wall of flame, first having asked of Statius, who had been so long in between us as we came, to follow on. And how I'd have been glad to jump into a vat of boiling glass just to get cool, so did it burn beyond all measure there where this had come to pass. And my sweet father, in his voice so fond to comfort me in my fear, said, "I swear I see her eyes already." Then a voice to guide us sang before us, and on where it seemed to come from we had little choice save fixing all our heed, and where the stair began we came forth. There within a light, "Come forward, all that my father blessed," the voice sang, so that startled by its might I couldn't look. And then it sang the rest. "The sun gives way," it sang, "and soon the night will come. Don't stop. Before the west grows dark, step out." The way went straight up through the rock, at such a pitch I cut off the last spark of sunlight. The sun low, I was a block to its weak rays, and we had barely gone a few steps, when I and my sages saw, by how my shadow failed to linger on, the sun had set behind us. And before the vast horizon had as yet assumed one color, and night ruled in all domains, each chose a step for bed. The mountain loomed, and though we much desired to take the pains of climbing further, it denied our wish to do so, for its laws do not allow travel in darkness. Goats that were kittenish and frisky on the heights are languid now, chewing the cud and silent in the shade, watched by the shepherd who leans on his staff, yet leaning, tends them lest a beast invade his quiet flock and scatter them like chaff. Just so were we three, though the goat was I and they the shepherds, shut in on each side by that high rock, and not much of the sky could I see, but in that gap gleamed a pride of stars. And they were bigger than I'd seen before and brighter. There I lay to ruminate and stargaze. Sleep, which frequently has been first to announce what would eventuate in my life, seized me. In the hour, I guess, before dawn, when sweet Venus in the east first lights the mountain with her endlessness of loving fire insensibly increased, I seemed to see, and see as if I dreamed, a beautiful young lady gathering flowers in a meadow. As she went, she seemed, while stooping for the pretty blooms, to sing. "Whoever wants to ask my name should know it's Leia, and I pluck, with hands so fair, the makings of a garland as I go. I like the look, but love the open air. My sister Rachel, on the other hand, sits always at her glass, as keen to see her own bright eyes as I am for the land beneath my feet. But there you are, that's me. I like to do, she likes to understand." And now the radiant splendors before dawn, always more welcome to the pilgrim when he lodges closer to where he was born, chased off the shadows on all sides, and then my sleep as well. And so I rose to find my mentors up already. "That sweet fruit of Eden which you mortals have in mind at all times, with your hunger so acute you seek it out on every bough, today will give peace to your craving." Never was there such a boon as I heard my guide say. desire upon desire without a pause, came over me to be above. I felt, with every step, my feathers grow. Steps sped beneath us, so the stairway seemed to melt, and on the top step Virgil turned and said, "You've seen the temporary fires up here, and seen the fires of hell that burn always. And now, my son, the place is very near, where I myself see nothing. Through the maze I've brought you here, with all my mind and art, by which your nature has been purified. It's ready now to play the major part. From here on, you yourself must be your guide. Steep ways and tight opposed you. You came through. The sun shines on your brow. Now see the grass. The trees and flowers here that spring anew from this fresh ground are all yours as you pass. Until those fair eyes come to welcome you, which will rejoice as once they came to weep to me for your plight, you may sit among these glories or go walking. But don't keep a vigil any longer for my tongue. No word or any sign can you expect from me. My work is done. Your will is whole and free and upright, sure of its effect. So don't deny its bidding. Of your soul, I make you captain, most blessed among men. Move on. You'll never hear from me again." Canto 28. Eager to search the dense, divine, and green forest, to know it both inside and out, this place through which the new day could be seen, with splendor tempered, while from all about fragrance converged on me, I left the bank without the guidance of a word or sign from Virgil. And with my own will to thank, I made my slow way in a level line across the ground. A sweet, unchanging air fondled my brow, the soft force of a breeze bending the trembling boughs to that point where the mountain's shadow first falls. At their ease, the boughs were swayed, and still remained upright enough for all the little birds to sing out of the treetops where they spend the night, and now turned their fine arts to welcoming the morning hours, ecstatic in the leaves which gave an undertone to their sweet rhymes, as near Ravenna the sirocco cleaves the air. One of the winds in ancient times, locked up by Aeolus, and the pine wood murmurs from branch to branch. Slow steps by then had brought me from the place where I first stood to enter, so far through the trees, that when I looked back I could not see whence I came. But now my further progress was cut short by a small stream whose tiny waves made game to bend the grass that hedged its lively sport leftward. And all the waters that win fame here in the world for purity would seem defiled compared to this. Though it flows dark in the perpetual shade, where not a gleam of moon or blaze of sun may light a spark below the surface, yet it can conceal nothing. My feet stopped there, while my sight passed over the stream, drawn forth by the appeal of freshly flowering branches in their vast variety. I saw that scene reveal, as suddenly as when a thing for awe drives out our thoughts, a lady, all alone, who sang and picked the flowers that lay before as she went on her way, her lilting tone matching the lightness of the petals. "Pray, fair lady, by love's fondling beams made warm, if I am to believe what your looks say, must be your heart's exalted inward form, come nearer to the stream, so that I may hear what you sing. For you make me recall Proserpine, when she plucked flowers too, and Pluto took her, scattering them all. Her mother lost her, and she lost the new glory that comes each year." With the slight fall of quick foot, when the dancing woman turns with feet together, neither one advanced by more than just a touch. And one who learns to do this tells you she has already danced by her ease only. This one turned to me on the red and yellow flowers like a veiled virgin with modest glance, and met my plea with song, approaching so her sweet sound sailed to reach me with its meaning. Then, when she was where the grassy edge was lapped and bathed by the river's lonely waves, she had the grace to lift her eyes to me, and they were swathed in light, poured from her lids to flood her face with such a brilliance that I don't believe Venus herself gave out in her surprise. When Cupid let loose and could not retrieve his accidental arrow as her eyes were on Adonis. While she stood upright on the other bank, she smiled as she arranged her many colors, flowering at that height with no seeds needed. We, too, were estranged by just the distance that the stream was wide. 3 paces only. But the Hellespont, where Xerxes had to cross back with his pride in ruins, and Leander, for his want of hero, had to swim from side to side, from Sestos to Abydos, never got more hatred than this pretty trickle earned from me, who wished it gone, but it was not. "You're new here. There are things you haven't learned," she said. "And it's perhaps because I smile in this place set apart for humankind to be its nest, you nurse your doubts a while. And there are clouds that linger in your mind. But Delectasti is the psalm you should remember. Lord, your work has made me glad, and I will triumph. Those words understood aright, for any qualms you ever had, will clear the mist with light. Now you are near before me, and are making your request. So tell me if there's more that you would hear. I'll set your curiosity at rest." "This water and the branches, how they sound," I said, "fly in the face of what I heard from Statius, how this higher ground can never change." And she, "Because the word and fact seem different things, you marvel. How this came to be, proceeding from its cause, I can unravel for you here and now. The good supreme, the grand sum of whose laws is his own pleasure, made man good, and made man love the good, and gave him this good place, the earthly paradise. Man could have stayed in peace here always. Such was not the case. Through his own fault his stay was only brief, and honest laughter and sweet sport gave way to tears, hard labor, and abiding grief, that the disturbances which, night and day, the exhalations of the sea and land make there below, following where they may, as students of those matters understand the ebb and flow of heat, should do no harm to man, the mountain rose aloft thus far, to stand clear from the banished, and be calm. But since the outer spheres revolving are moved by the primum mobile, that first rotation, unless interrupted, strikes on this height, all impurities dispersed from its surrounding air, and as it likes, it does. It makes the wood, for being dense, resound. The smitten plants have such a potency, the air with their intense virtue is impregnated at a touch. And so the wind must scatter it abroad, and so the northern hemisphere, as both its fit self and its proper sky accord, brings forth from diverse virtues different growth. This understood, small marvel would it seem down yonder if some plant, no seed on show, should take root. In accordance with that theme, this holy ground has every seed you know filling the soil, and fruits that are not picked back there. This water springs forth from no vein restored by vapor that the harshly strict cold has condensed, as earthly rivers gain and lose their force, but from a constant, sure fountain it comes, and what pours forth like rain by God's will must return to fill a store open on either side. Thus virtue flows down one side. So when men are bathed with it, their very memory of sin all goes. And on the other side, the opposite occurs, and memories of their good deeds return. The stream on this side bears the name of Lethe. On that, you know. It needs first to be sipped at from both sides the same to be effective, and there is no taste sweeter than this. And though your thirst may well be satisfied by this outline I've traced, there's something more that I feel bound to tell just for your joy, and though these words may go beyond my brief, I think you'll find they meet your approbation. Those old names you know, who once sang of a golden age replete with happiness, perhaps exulted so because they dreamed of this place. On their peak, Parnassus, their minds filled with this one. Spring eternal, human innocence, All speak of just such fruit, nectar in everything. Ovid himself said all this would come true. She paused. Right then I turned around to my two poets, and I saw what they could do instead of speech. They smiled, and she was why. Then once again the fair one caught my eye. Canto 29. When I turned back to her, I heard the rest. Though she had done with speaking, she sang on as if in love. But how all those are blessed whose sins are pardoned! And I was far gone in thought of nymphs, alone in woodland shade, who wander, one alert to see the sun, the other to avoid it. So she made her way upstream against the rippling run, with little steps along the bank, and I kept level. In 100 strides or less, the two banks made an equal bend, and by my reckoning, which I'd call a good guess, we now faced east again. We'd not gone far that way, when suddenly she turned and said, "My brother, look and listen." Few things are sudden like lightning. This was. In my head, as brightness swept the forest all around, I told myself it must be lightning, yet, since lightning disappears as soon as found, and this grew brighter still, I hedged my bet and asked myself, "What's this?" And then a sound, a melody, ran sweet through shining air, and so my zeal for good caused me to blame Eve's boldness, that a woman, when and where all in the earth and sky obeyed the same divine will, should decline to further bear, for she was only just formed and alone, the veil of ignorance. For had she stayed submissive underneath it, I'd have known, like all men, this whole limitless parade of indescribable delights before, and for far longer. While I went among so many first fruits in the mighty store of bliss eternal, while my will was hung suspended in desire of all the more of joys and miracles, the air caught fire beneath the green boughs, and that lovely sound exploded into songs, choir upon choir. Virgins most holy, muses, stony ground, cold, hunger, vigils, I have borne for you, not true? But now my need drives me to ask reward. Now let the whole of Helicon come through with what it owes me, all it can afford. Urania and her singers should step in to help me versify things hard for thought, such as the following. I can begin by saying that my puzzled eye was caught, a little further on, by 7 trees of gold, or what appeared to us as such. A false impression reinforced to please our credulous perception by how much distance remained from us to them. But when I'd come so near that these deceiving shapes remained ambiguous no longer, then the faculty which no deceit escapes, the power of reason, saw them as they were, as candlesticks, and heard the voices sing, "Hosanna!" And up there, without a blur, it flew alone, the lovely spreading thing. More than the moon in the clear midnight sky of her mid-month, that fine array was bright. I turned around with wonder in my eye to Virgil, and his look had the same light of sheer amazement, and I lifted high my face again to those things which moved near to us so slowly new brides would have been more quick. The lady scorned me. "You appear amazed by just the living lights you've seen. Where is your heed for what is not yet here, yet comes behind them?" I saw people, then, who followed, clad in white, white so intense as here there never was, and then again the water shone so to my left that hence, as from a mirror, came my left side back to my eyes when I gazed. When I was at the part where just the streamlet kept my track from meeting theirs, for a better view than that I paused, and let the flames move on, to stain like streaming pennons all the air behind with 7 tinctures, as the sun and rain bring forth a bow in colors of rich kind, and Delian Diana's girdle grows. Beyond my sight the banners went back, and as well as mortal eyes see or mind knows, the outermost exemplars of that band of candelabra were 10 paces set apart. Beneath the fair sky I describe, 2 dozen elders crowned with lilies met my gaze 2 at a time. Among the tribe of Adam's daughters, they sang, you are blessed, and blessed forever let your beauty be. The flowers and fresh leaves were left to rest on the far bank by that light infantry of the elect. As brilliance follows soon on brilliance there in heaven, came four more creatures on after, and these had the boon of green-leaf crowns, and each one of the four had six wings, all their plumage full of eyes, and if the eyes of Argus were alive, they'd look like that. But lack of time denies that I be lavish with my rhymes, and strive in their depiction. Read Ezekiel, who saw them when they came in from the cold with wind and cloud and fire, and just as well as he described them then, his words of old applied here, save the figure of six wings that Revelation gives them meets my count and not his four. John had the truth of things in this respect and got the right amount. But anyway, between those four, the space contained a fine two-wheel triumphal car drawn by a griffin, which employed the place on each side of the middle band, as far on each side as the first of three, to spread its wings among the colored streaks without cutting through any, and the wings instead rose so high that their tips left you in doubt where they might be. Where this bird could be said to be bird, it was all gold, and where man was white mingled with red. Nor even Rome had honored Scipio the African or great Augustus when it cheered them home with so exultant a conveyance. Not the sun itself could equal it. The sun whose carriage was destroyed when Phaeton got his signals mixed, and Jove paid heed to one of Earth's devout prayers. He chose to be just in secret counsel. And three ladies danced around at the right wheel. One, red as rust, was so red you'd have missed her as she pranced inside a fire. One more of emerald seemed made. The third looked like fresh-fallen snow. The white one first, and then the red one, called the time, and from that song's pulse, fast or slow, they moved. And on the left, four others tripped their festival. They were in purple, clad, their measure set by one who hopped and skipped, with three eyes in her head. The whole troop had, behind it, two old men in different dress from one another, but alike in grave and lofty bearing, their shared seriousness. One showed the spirit by which nature gave the world Hippocrates, to help mankind when ill. The other showed the opposite concern, for its sword lifted chilled my mind across the river's width, so brightly lit and sharp it seemed to castigate the soul. Then came four humble holy ones. At last an old man walked who slept, and yet his whole expression spoke for keenness. As they passed, the final seven looked clad like the first, except this time no lily crowns were worn, but roses and red flowers, an outburst of crimson round the brow I would have sworn from where I stood was fire. And then a halt was called. A mighty thunderclap was heard. The car had stopped right there. The storm's assault appeared to mean permission was deferred for that throng to go further. There it stood, the pageant, flags in front, the force for good. Canto 30. Unlike the bear that helps us navigate, but still its seven stars must come and go, or wear a misty veil, it was the state of this wain here above to never know such flux. In their first heaven they stood still, the seven candelabra. Only sin could fluster them. They shone on to fulfill their task. Between their light and the griffin, the truthful squad turned to the car as will a man who seeks peace. Like a messenger from heaven, one sang out this line, my spouse, now come with me from Lebanon. Nor were the others slow to match him. As the house of all the blessed shall fill, at the last blast of trumpets, with souls leaping from the tomb, their voices once again what in the past they were, and their song for the crack of doom will ring out, hallelujah! Thus arose there on the car, called by the elder's voice, 100 representatives of those who speak for life eternal. Yours the choice to come, and you are blessed, they cried, and threw flowers aloft and all around, and then they quoted Virgil, all of whom they knew, transmitting God's words through the words of men, "Give lilies with full hands." At break of day I once saw all the eastern vista turn rose-colored, and the sky clear every way elsewhere was lovely, for the sun's full burn was softened as its face glowed in a shroud of vapors, and the naked eye could bear the sight a long time. So within a cloud of flowers, rising here and falling there, flung from the angel's hands, a lady shone. Her white veil, girt with olive, mantle green, fretted with living fire. And then my soul, which had for years felt no cause for the awe by which her living form once made my whole existence tremble, now, though barred from more knowledge by eye, still registered the force of hidden virtue and my erstwhile love. Sight struck by virtue in its lofty course, pierced once again, now I was here above, as once I was in boyhood. I turned left with confidence, as any child will run to mother when of fortitude bereft, and said to Virgil, "Not a drop, not one of blood remains in me that does not shake. I know the sure signs of an ancient flame." But Virgil, who'd done so much for my sake, Virgil, my father, Virgil, he that came for me to give myself and him to take me onward to salvation, was now gone. Nor did all Eden's sweetness, lost by Eve, the ancient mother, take effect upon my cheeks, dew-washed so all tear-stains should leave. But here they were again. She said, "Dante, weep not that Virgil leaves you, weep not yet. For you must weep in another way, for your sins." Just then, when I tried to get a clear view of the figure that so spoke my name, I note this just to pay my debt to sheer necessity, there, at a stroke, I saw a lady at the car's left side. A fleet commander gone from stern to prow, to see the other captains fight the tide of hardship and to urge them on, and now the lady, who had just appeared to me, veiled in the festival of angels, fixed her eyes on mine beyond the stream, and she, although her veil was still full and was mixed with olive leaves, which was Minerva's sign, and therefore she could not be plainly seen, yet royally, like one with the design of holding back the heat her words might mean while speaking, said this, "Look, look at me well, for I am Beatrice indeed. How do you dare approach this mountain? Can you tell? For man is happy here, yet here are you." My glance fell to the clear front, but I met myself, and brought it back up to the grass, because shame weighed my brow. So children get the collywobbles when their mothers pass judgment through pity. She was silent. Then as one the angels sang this, "Lord, in you I had hope." But they all stopped singing when they'd done the first 9 verses, and come to the bit about the feet in the large rooms. Just as along the back of Italy the snow piles up and solidly entombs the tree trunks as the wind's intensity increases from the northeast, but will melt when out of Africa the south wind blows and dribbles like a candle that has felt the fire. Just so was I, as first I froze, and had no tears or sighs before they sang in concert with the music of the spheres. But when I heard that the deep, melting pang of their song, fit for supernatural ears, was all for me, then, more than if they'd said, "Lady, why shame him so?" the ice around my heart turned breath in water, and it spread with anguish through my mouth and eyes, unbound from my tight breast. Still standing motionless, on the same side of the car, she then addressed the good souls in their pitying distress. "You watch the world a long day without rest, so neither night nor sleep can hide a thing that goes on or is ready to begin. Therefore my answer's made, considering him weeping yonder more than you, so sin and sorrow may be measured in like terms, not just by how the distant great wheels spin, a movement which assigns and so confirms, an end to each seed as the stars dictate. But by his lavish gift of the divine graces that reign from such a lofty state, our sight can't reach the vapors that consign the blessing. So in early life this man had every gift and talent in the book for a fulfillment of a marvelous plan. But often, when the soul has that good look of strength, the ground grows poisonous and wild with matching vigor, as if bad seed took a deeper root. Bright prospects are defiled. My countenance sustained him for a space. I brought him with me, with my youthful eyes, the right way. But I reached the entry place of proper youth, where adolescence dies at 25, and there he turned his face away from me, his wishes otherwise. My state was raised from beauty of the flesh to that of soul, and virtue so increased in me that I became less dear, less fresh, less welcome, and his questing steps soon ceased to come my way and went another way, less true, after false images of good, which keep no promises. Nor did it pay, through dreams and all the other means I could, to call him back, for he would not pay heed. He fell so low. All means to save him fell short of the task. Deciding I would need to show him the lost people down in hell, I visited the threshold of the pit and heaped with prayers the one that brought him here. And every prayer in tears. No help for it. God's high decrees would crack and hold no fear if Lethe could be passed without a writ of penitence and its dear sweet taste kept delicious in the mouth, with no tears wept. Canto 31. You that are on the sacred stream's far side, she said again, turning to me the tip of her speech, whose mere edge had hurt my pride sharply enough. Speak now. Unlock your lip. The accusation needs, if this be true, confession joined to it. My wits were so confused that what my voice set out to do began, but past my lips it could not go. She let up just a little, then she said, What are you thinking of? Pray answer me. For those sad memories are not yet dead, slain in you by the stream. Uncertainty, mixed with unbridled fear, drove forth a yes from my mouth that to hear you had to see. Just as a crossbow, wound with too much stress, breaks when it shoots both in the bow and cord, and sends the shaft with less force to the mark, so, broken by that heavy charge, I poured forth tears and sighs, and my trapped voice went dark. At which she said, In the desires you had from me, which led you in the love of good, beyond which nothing that can make us glad is to be longed for, what could have withstood your hopes of progress? What chain or cross-ditch? And what attractions and advantages seemed prominent in other things by which they so diverted your allegiances? Heaving a bitter sigh, I strained my voice to answer, and my lips just managed this. As soon as your face vanished, all my choice was for the present day and its false bliss. And she, had you kept silent or withdrawn what you confessed, your fault would still be plain. Known to the judge of everybody born. But when a man's own cheek bathes in the rain of shame for his own sin, then in our court the wheel turns back against the sword's edge. Yet in order that you bear the shameful thought of how you wandered, and thus duly get more strength when you in other times are brought within the range of sirens, pray forget the tears and listen. Hear of the straight way my buried flesh would have consigned you to. Never did art or nature, night or day, present such loveliness of form to you as that which harbored me, and it is gone, crumbled to dust. And if thus, by my death, the highest beauty, as you've journeyed on, has failed you, then what was there drawing breath that could have drawn you to it by desire? Truly you should have, when the first shaft struck of lying things, trailed me as I went higher, since I deceived no more. No girl with luck of looks, or other vanities of brief and little worth should ever have weighed down your wing to take more hits, and all the grief that goes with them. New chicks have the renown of waiting as the shots fly, 2, 3, 4. The same is not true for the full-fledged bird, not when he sees the deadly net spread, or the arrows climb. Just as, without a word, a shamed child stands with eyes fixed on the ground, acknowledging its faults while listening repentant, I stood there and made no sound. She said, Since hearing sets you sorrowing, lift up your beard and get your grief by eye. The wind from our land, or from where the king Iarbas rules in Africa, may try to rip the oak, but it's no tough thing compared to my resistance when I raised my glance at her command, since by your beard she meant a face still young, and thus amazed by its new hair, and venom to be feared was in her argument. And when my sight was lifted, it saw how those angels paused in scattering their flowers with delight. My eyes, whose lack of confidence she caused, saw Beatrice turn towards the beast whose one person is in two natures. Veiled beyond the stream, to me she seemed to have outdone her former self, when still she knew the bond of life with mortals and surpassed them all. The stinging nettle of remorse was such that out of everything I could recall, that which most bent me to its love was much more hatred now. Self-knowledge bit my heart, and down I fell. And what I then became, she knows who caused it. When I was in part restored to sense, Matilda, that self-same lady I'd found alone, now watched me float while she said, Hold me, hold me. In the stream I was immersed as far up as my throat, and she drew me behind her, like a dream of lightness, lighter than the little boat whose name recalls the shuttle of the loom, she passed across the water. We drew near the blessed further shore, where I heard bloom, Purge me. A song so clearly sweet to hear, I can't recall it, far less put it in ink. The lady spread her arms, then clasped my brow and pushed me under, where I had to drink the water. Then she pulled me out somehow, and led me bathed into the circling dance of those four fair ones, and each with her arm embraced me, and they sang, By law, not chance, here we are nymphs with forms of earthly charm, but in the sky were stars. When Beatrice descended to the world, we were ordained well in advance to be her handmaids. This is still our function. So far you have gained the sight of her, but not yet seen her eyes. Within their happy light three virtues shine. Beside their radiant depth our dazzle dies, because the theological design sees more, and you will too, with all disguise laid open by your sharpened glance. They thus began to sing, and brought me to the breast of their great beast, when Beatrice turned to us, and they continued, See you don't arrest your gaze. The holy emeralds are displayed by us for you to see, gems by which love once loosed its darts. And then my eyes obeyed a thousand wishes heated far above all earthly fire, heat holding them to hers, where here she watched the griffin. Like the sun caught in a glass, that creature, whose form stirs two beings so completely into one, blazed in her eyes, now with the one and now the other, nature. Reader, do you ask whether I marveled at the sight of how the thing still in itself fulfilled the task of alerting its image? While my soul, full of astonishment and happiness, tasted that food which satisfies the whole of its own need, but makes the need no less for those that eat, the others then advanced, and by their bearing proved their higher state, as their angelic roundelay they danced. Turn, Beatrice, turn your glance and contemplate your faithful one, who for one glimpse of you has come so far, and by your grace confer on us a favor you alone may do. Unveil your mouth to him. As your eyes were one beauty, here's another to reveal. Splendor of living light eternal. What poet has ever grown pale when leaves steal the sunlight on Parnassus, or has not known when to check the draught from its deep well. That he would fail to seem as if he'd got brain fever from the doomed attempt to tell of you, as you appeared there, heaven-born, with heaven and its harmonies to frame your radiance in a perpetual dawn, forever changing, ceaselessly the same, looking like that. And first, you said my name.
Canto 32. Drowned in their object after 10 years' thirst, my eyes were so intent, all other sense was quelled in me. But while they were immersed in that, they had only indifference for all else. In that way, the holy smile had drawn them to it with the same old net. But then the goddesses, in their own style, turned my attention left. "Too fixed as yet," they said, referring to my gaze so keen on revelation that it still was blind. And blind I was, as if my eyes had been scorched by the sun. But when a lesser kind of object drew my sight, lesser, I mean, beside the greater from which I withdrew out of necessity, then what was seen through my dazed eye was soon adjusted to, being within my range, and so I saw the glorious army, after a right wheel, returning with the sun, and 7 more flames in its face. As rounding on its heel, a squadron saves itself beneath its shields, turning its colors while the generals hold their main face full front as that squadron yields, just so the holy soldiers with their gold and guiding banners came by in the van, and thus the pole brought round the car. Again the ladies sought the wheels where they began, and so the holy griffin, now as then, shifted its blessed cargo, showing none of all its feathers shaken. Statius, Matilda, the fair flower-gathering one, and I allowed the right wheel to lead us, the inner wheel that made the smaller loop. And as we travelled through the lofty wood, left empty by her fault, who was the dupe of that false serpent and thought his words good, angelic music timed our steps. The flight of just one arrow, 3 times multiplied, we'd gone, perhaps, when Beatrice, from her height, came down. And from them all, from every side, I heard the murmur, "Adam." And then they encircled a bare tree, its flowers stripped like all its foliage, and its display of branches, with no green stuff clad or tipped, spread wider as it climbed up and away, looking like piled-up hair which Indians would marvel at for height, they who grow tall trees in their woods. "You're blessed to have